This is Jack Vaughan for SearchSoa.com. I'm speaking today with Dr. Chris Harding of the Open Group. I know you're working on a book. You're doing a lot. Just briefly, Chris, what's of interest to you, you know, these days and to the Open Group regarding, you know, SOA in general?
Okay, so SOA has been around now for quite a while. It's been highly visible for the last 3 years. People have been doing things with SOA from before then. So what we're seeing is that people are now more moving into a mode where they're actually doing things with SOA than the initial mode where they were excited by the new concept and they wanted to learn all about it. They're more in practical doing SOA mode now, and so there are a number of things which continue to be of interest in that context, and one of them is SOA governance. When you come to do SOA and actually put it into practice, it turns out that having the right governance regime is very important.
Well, it seems hard. Organizationally, I would imagine, could be a challenge. If people looked at governance as a panacea, if you will, and then discovered it was not so easy to create.
Well, that's right. Governance is really about how a group of people is organized and controlled to do work. One of the problems about SOA governance is that there isn't a particular SOA group of people. SOA governance includes aspects of corporate governance, includes aspects of IT governance, includes aspects of implementation governance, includes aspects of operational governance. So there's a lot of confusion when you talk about SOA governance, and you need to cut through that to some extent. Yes, it is one of the key enabling factors that people are finding for successful SOA.
Have you found to date any particular best practices for getting different organizational stakeholders to be on the same page with SOA governance?
Well, we have a project in the Open Group, SOA Working Group, that is looking at SOA governance, and it's in fact developing a reference model for SOA governance plus a method to develop for a specific enterprise that is doing SOA a specific governance regime that suits that enterprise from the reference model. A key part of that process, clearly, as with any process related to architecture, is talking to the stakeholders and finding what the stakeholders want and what their requirements are.
Now, I think at least on the development side, reuse seems to be a particular benefit one would like coming from SOA governance effort. And yet, you know, I've spoken with you in the past, and as you mentioned, you know, ever since machine code was invented, people have been trying to do reuse. How important is it, and what is the SOA architect trying to get out of these encounters, these projects?
Well, service reuse is important. It's clearly a way in which enterprises get financial benefit. It's clearly less expensive to do development if you are reusing code in some way than if you simply write everything from scratch. In fact, it's not so much the development impact, it's the ongoing maintenance impact. That is bad if you don't reuse where you can. And SOA provides a new context in which reuse can be achieved. You can talk about reuse of services, reusing things perhaps at a higher level than if you're talking about reuse of subroutines or whatever. And service reuse is probably the first thing that people focus on when they think about SOA governance, because it has such a tangible impact. But it's not the only thing, and to my mind, it's not necessarily even the most important aspect of SOA governance.
Okay.
Service reuse is one thing. Rapid implementation is another aspect. The fact that you have enterprise agility, that you're implementing things more rapidly with SOA, that's an important characteristic. But I think perhaps the most important characteristic from the architect's point of view is that we're moving towards a situation where perhaps the architect has less direct control of the implementation and is more concerned with establishing the process by which that implementation will take place. And this is a big change from the architect's point of view. It's not solely due to SOA, but I think SOA is one of the contributing factors in that change.
And so the architect tries to ensure what? I suppose it varies by architect?
Well, I mean, it's questions like, you know, do your developers talk directly to the business people? Maybe, or can your developers come up with a completely new solution within the context of your architecture which solves new business problems? Can they do that within your architecture but without having to come back to you and saying, well, we want a change to the architecture? Or are you going to insist that whenever a new feature is put in, then that's revisited at the architecture level? If you want agility, I think you have to enable the implementers to take more responsibility, and that clearly is a big factor in what your governance processes are. You know, if you are going to allow people to do things, to do more things, to take more responsibility, then you have to organize them and you have to control them in a different way. You have to look for different checkpoints, and you have to have a different culture, because governance shouldn't just be about checklists and procedures, and in fact they should come at the end of the thinking about governance. It's more important to establish the culture, to establish the communication between the people, than it is to get the sign-off procedures absolutely rigid.
Well, in 2008, in some camps we've seen some I don't know if backlash is the word, or fatigue with the SOA rollouts, and I wonder if if it is true that SOA requires some transformation in culture, if that is something behind what we're seeing today, that some folks were thrown in the towel even, or slowing down implementation. Well, tell me what you're seeing.
Well, and remember that my perspective, we're a consortium of users of information technology, of providers of information technology, so I'm not directly involved in SOA implementations. What I'm seeing is certainly continued interest in SOA, developing interest in SOA, but it's no longer the interest in finding out what is SOA. It's more an interest in what are the best practices and how can we make this work. So I think that's one of the people talk about the hype curve. That's one of the factors. We're in the stage where we're beyond the point where this is a bright shiny new toy, and inevitably when that point is reached, there's less attention paid to SOA.
Okay, well, finally, I know the group not too long ago had one of its events, conferences in Munich, and I had heard that one of the things you yourself were looking at was vertical business standards for SOA.
Right, we had in fact a very interesting session on vertical business standards. From a general architecture perspective, it's one of the things that architects are encouraged to look for when they're developing business architectures is, are there applicable business standards on which we could base our business architecture? From a SOA perspective, I think they provide the context in which you can extend SOA beyond the single enterprise. You can have an enterprise SOA without necessarily worrying about vertical business standards, but if you want to cooperate with other enterprises and share services with them and use their services and have them use your services, then you need to be working within some kind of common business model. And these business standards, such as the Supply Chain Council score, the Telemanagement Forum, NGOS, the APQC, and so on, these can provide that kind of model in which enterprises can cooperate.
Chris, tell our listeners that you have written widely on this, and we will have links available to some of your writings on our website. Appreciate your time. I'd like to thank you for being with Search SOA today.
Thank you, Jack. It's been a pleasure to participate in this, and thank you for inviting me to.
Okay, well, that's Jack Vaughan for SearchSOA.com.